Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first annual Panny Award Ceremony. And now your host, Dan and Bianca Reichert.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much to the nameless intro voiceover artist that you just heard.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks. That was great work. My name is Dan Reichert, as you heard earlier, and sitting across from here is Bianca Reichert, my wife. How are you doing, honey?
I'm doing well. We're here at the Panny Awards. I'm very excited. We're wearing our fancy formal clothing.
Dress to the nines. I hope everyone saw the red carpet ceremony earlier. Razor just looking sharp as ever. Bold, bold decisions from Razor Dog.
I can't believe it. Razor, who are you wearing?
Oh, really? Okay, great. All right. Oh,
Alexander Wang, huh? Who would have thought?
My goodness. That's a fashion person, probably.
Yes. He gave my old boss a tracksuit.
Razor did?
No, Alexander Wang.
Oh, is he an alive fashion man?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did he come into the office?
Yeah, he was taught by the boss, and he got a weird tracksuit.
That was a weird job you had there.
Yeah, it was weird.
That's a lot of weird clientele coming in there. But yes, this is the first annual Panny Award Ceremony. This is something we've talked about doing for a while, and just the timing never quite lined up, but we're here at the end of 2019 to look at, let's talk about what this is going to be here. So,
what isn't it? It's not the Panty Awards.
It's not. It sounds like Panty Awards.
That's a
but listen, it's the
Spearmint
Panty
Rhino thing.
The Panny Awards.
Panty.
Yes. So this to be eligible for a Panty Award, a prestigious Panty Award, which we should probably design what they look like. What can we can like 3D print a trophy, right? Your brother's got one of those things,
yeah.
Right? Okay. It has to be a show or movie, a piece of content that you and I, Bianca and Dan, covered on this here podcast, Panning the Stream, in the calendar year 2019.
Indeed.
That means there's, you know, well, not quite 52 because, you know, there were the My Heroes and a lot of shows. You know, we did a couple episodes of Dark. We did a lot of Neon Genesis Evangelion. So a lot. Dozens of shows were eligible for each of these 10 categories here. And here is how we are going to decide the winners. We have 10 categories. We're going to go from the bottom to the top. And then we have several nominees, not a set number of nominees in each one. And we will kind of whittle down our votes, Dan and Bianca's votes, for the winner of each category. If that, if the one that we choose, we agree upon, that will automatically win. If we are not in agreement, we will go to the audience vote as the tiebreaker to see which one had the most votes out of the two that you and I, Bianca, chose.
Right.
But regardless, we will be reading the audience winner, because we did a vote on Twitter and the Patreon. We will be reading the audience winner of each category, as well as the official Panny Award winner.
That's right. So the audience will, in some cases, have a say as to who receives the Panny Award.
Yes, they will be the tiebreaker vote. And I don't expect us always to agree on every one of these. So let's get Knives Out here. Hey, that was a good movie.
That was good.
Knives Out was awesome. All right, are we ready to get into it with our first category?
Let's do it.
All right, the first category.
The Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan Memorial Award, also known as Most Mediocre.
The nominees are Glow, Season 3.
Perfect Bid, The Contestant That Knew Too Much.
Living With Yourself.
True Detective, Season 3.
El Camino, A Breaking Bad Movie. Okay, first category. So, most mediocre. I think that implies, obviously it's not just bad.
Right.
Like straight up bad. So, anything on here do you think, I think Perfect Bid was actually a bad documentary.
Yeah, I think what really makes something mediocre is what your expectations are going into it. And I feel like a lot of these movies or TV in their own right are fine.
Yeah.
But with consideration to expectations, they definitely miss the mark. And I think Perfect Bid of this group immediately stands out to me as just a straight up bad documentary.
Yeah.
Because from my recollection of it, we did this earlier in the year, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like 80% of it was just about this one dude's obsession with The Price is Right.
Right.
And only like the last bit was actually about this Perfect Bid. And they don't even really explain how he found that number, how he arrived at that number. Like it was very unsatisfactory. It raises a lot of answers, a lot of questions that it doesn't answer.
Yeah, and there's no big build-up to a payoff. Like, I think of the great documentaries and stuff like The Jinx and things like that, and or even Tickled. And it's like, there's always the big, you know, there's a big payoff. And, like, that's not required for a great documentary, but I just think we were building up to this quote-unquote perfect bid, and it didn't deliver. It's just not an interesting story. Like, you know, YouTube videos about the guy who did the Press Your Luck stuff are more interesting in 10 minutes than this was in an hour and a half or whatever.
Yeah, and I went in really interested because I love the stories about people cheating game shows. It's so fascinating to me because I feel like there's so many eyes. It's not like cheating in a video game. There's so many eyes on a game show, so many producers. There's a whole audience, people that are obsessed with it, and someone has to somehow go above everyone else, people that know the game, people that make the game, and have it committed to tape what they're doing.
Yeah.
So it's like especially egregious to me. And I went in with high expectations and it was just really, really, it was just straight up bad, not mediocre. Bad.
Okay, so we're in agreement to cut this one.
We are in agreement.
Okay, we're down to four. We've got Glow, Living With Yourself, True Detective, and El Camino. Boy, True Detective was pretty mediocre, I thought. It was good for most of it, and then it just kind of fizzled at the end.
Well, I feel like the acting was amazing in that
show.
Yeah, the acting was great, so good.
Yeah.
And it built up so much tension throughout the show, and there were so many mysteries, and it kept introducing more mysteries, and it was playing around with time a lot. So, you know, I was waiting to see what the connection was there. And it just gets resolved in this really arbitrary info dump way at the end. In like 15 minutes,
sitting
some guy
at the table.
Yeah, some guy literally just explains what the deal was. And it wasn't this big, huge conspiracy. It was just this kind of one-off thing. And it really made me feel, I don't know, it just made me feel kind of depressed the whole show because you're also dealing with these characters' mortality because it flips back a lot through like when they were youthful, burgeoning detectives versus when they're kind of decrepit old men. And it's like, well, these were guys that had a good life, you know what I mean? And it just makes me feel like shit that they're in this way. Like, at least in The Irishman, you know, when it goes to the
I haven't finished it yet.
Well, I'm not really spoiling anything. When it goes to the main character's old age, like it's like, well, he was a shitty person. So
it
doesn't really make you depressed. I mean, it is dealing with mortality like this too. But this was just such a gloomy, sullen thing. It nails the mood that the other True Detective seasons were all about, like the atmospheric stuff for sure.
And better than season two.
Definitely better than season two. But I think the one redeeming thing about this season was the acting. The acting was really incredible. And I think more than anything, it was just kind of like a character study.
It was. And it was just a really unsatisfying payoff, I think. So I think maybe that one hangs for now. Let me posit this.
Lay it on me.
I think El Camino, while it was not the most exciting piece of Breaking Bad content put out by Vince Gilligan and them, but I think it bordered too much on good to hang in this category.
Because
I really did enjoy it. It was fun seeing those characters again. It told a little side story the best you could within the confines of what everyone already knows happens in Breaking Bad. So I think out of these four that are remaining, El Camino doesn't belong because it's a little too good.
Yeah. I feel like there was no way El Camino was going to blow me away because the end of Breaking Bad, it was so rare where a show is that good the whole way through and it ends perfectly. And I feel like this movie could have either been just fine, like decent, or it could have been terrible. And I think it ended up being good, but I don't think it could have been better than good. I think good was the best it could have been considering what it was following.
Yeah. And the time you've got 2 hours, if that, to tell the story and everything. And it's like, well, they had like 5 incredible seasons of Breaking Bad. So I would say let's take this off because while, you know, not as exciting as Breaking Bad proper, it's still good.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was good to revisit that. I mean, obviously it doesn't play ball with Breaking Bad.
No.
The show, but.
All right, so here's what we got. We got Glow Season 3, True Detective Season 3, and Living With Yourself. I'm looking at this, and I might think that Living With Yourself is the winner.
Well, what do you think about Glow
Season 3? Glow, I thought, was good. You know, it's still really well made. I think the acting is great by everyone involved with that show. I think Alison Brie and Marin and, you know, even like Awesome Kong and stuff. Like, I think all the girls play their roles incredibly well. I think the change of scenery was welcome after a couple seasons in L.A. And I thought there were actually some pretty interesting things. I think Bash's arc was interesting. I think some of the stuff with like the drag club was good. So overall, I mean, I wasn't blown away by the season, but I definitely lean on the positive end of Glow Season 3.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it. I was entertained. I think it's the worst of the three seasons of Glow.
Sure.
I feel like it was kind of unfocused, and maybe that's due in part to the fact that they kind of took the focus off the wrestling, which was the driving force of the previous seasons. And because now they're trying to build up all the characters of their huge ensemble cast, I guess you would call it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because of that, it kind of ends up suffering because it is so just jumps from one thing to another. And if you think about it, there's so many characters and they all kind of each had their arc. There was like the wrestler Beirut and her lesbian relationship. There was Bash's arc and Rhonda dealing with Bash's mom.
There's
and
Awesome Kong and her back.
Awesome Kong and Ruth and Sam's romance and Debbie, like her weird teasing of the eating disorder, and then her...
Oh, right, and like, that never paid off.
Yeah, her arm candy thing, and then she takes charge and becomes a businesswoman.
Mark Maron's daughter. And
yeah, it's the screenplay stuff. There is so much going on that it just kind of lacked focus, and
yeah.
None of the stories by themselves were compelling enough to be, like, the one focus, so it just kind of spread it out, and I don't know, I thought it was I was entertained and I appreciate it being, you know, tangentially related to wrestling, but I wish that would have been more of the focus. It really was an afterthought in the season, especially since being in the Las Vegas context, they were just doing the same show every day pretty much.
Right, right.
So yeah, I agree. I am like kind of, if it's a scale from 1 to 100, I would put myself at like 60 for this season.
Yeah, the needle's on the right side of that.
Yeah, but I still feel like it is can be considered kind of mediocre.
Oh, all three of these certainly, I think, fall under mediocre. So before we cut anything here, let's talk about Living With Yourself. Mm-hmm. Living With Yourself, I feel like it should be a layup where it's like, okay, Paul Rudd, everyone loves Paul Rudd, playing two different comedic characters, you know, one the kind of schlubby guy who wants to improve his life and one that's like the perfect version of Paul Rudd. Mm-hmm. I thought his wife was good in the role. I thought the concept was solid. I think the way they did, you know, that same kind of cloning type story we've seen before and things, I thought it was an interesting way where it's like, oh God, you were supposed to die, but you didn't. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was a lot of stuff that was set up for this to be really, really good and funny. And I feel like it was all just serviceable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were a few moments where we like laughed out loud.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But I would expect more from a comedy starring Paul Rudd like times two. You know what I mean? I feel like he did really good with what he was doing. He had to play two different characters that were like just different enough. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, they kind of ruined, like they have this great tool where they could build tension with this thing about like keeping the clone a secret, and they just kind of did away with that. I feel like three episodes or four episodes, pretty quickly they kind of revealed the clone stuff to the wife.
Yeah, and I don't think it was as earth-shattering of a moment and follow-up as it should have been. Like, that is a like life-changing, like nature of reality-changing, you know, thing if you're the wife. And I think she was just like, whoa, what's going on? And then it's like, well, let's figure this out. You know?
And there was so much time devoted to the like his job at the Addy agency or whatever that was, agency that was kind of really boring. And if I remember correctly, the very last episode or the second to last episode, he gets abducted by some like CDC agent.
Oh, that was like really weird and unrealistic. And
it was weird, but I would have liked if the whole season was about him trying to escape the government that wants to conceal. Like that would be more interesting than what happened. And then on the side, dealing with his wife and his job stuff and all that stuff. But I feel like it's an interesting premise, but it wasn't executed well. And the setup for the following season was just like, I don't really want to see two Paul Rudds raising this kid.
Yeah, they didn't deliver on like the main hook. Why would, you know, this next season based on raising a kid, you know, get us super excited, you know?
Yeah, so it had this one thing that just kind of carried it the whole way that was strong in the beginning and just kind of weakened over time because you get accustomed to the idea and there's no more surprises anymore.
Yeah, and I think based on everything we said, my vote, are you ready to vote? We've covered the three finalists here, True Detective, Glow, and Living With Yourself.
Okay.
You ready to come to our votes?
I think so.
I'm going to vote for Living With Yourself.
I think I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I think True Detective, the acting really saved it, and Glow was serviceable.
Solid. It's fine. Yeah. Living With Yourself, the first annual Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan Memorial Award, also known as Most Mediocre, the Panty Award goes to Living With Yourself.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Living With Yourself. Now let's take a look. I'm going to go over to the survey here, and I'm going to see where the audience landed on
it.
Yeah. Ah, wouldn't you know it, the audience winner for Most Mediocre, Living With Yourself.
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
It took 25% of the vote. Next up was El Camino, followed by Perfect Bid, True Detective, and Glow had the least amount. So.
Okay. Well, I could see Glow not being particularly popular either.
No, Glow had the least votes for most mediocre.
No, I mean, because I feel like if more people watched it, they probably would have.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Whereas Living With Yourself probably had a little bit of hype behind it because of the concept and stuff. Okay, so unanimous among Dan, Bonk, and the audience, Living With Yourself is the most mediocre Panty Award of the year.
Excellent.
All right, and let's move on to our next category.
Favorite reality programming.
The nominees are Fire, the greatest party that never happened.
Perfect Bid, the contestant who knew too much.
The boy band con, the Lou Pearlman story.
Terrace House.
Okay, so in the past, we've covered a lot of like reality-based programming, which we're lumping in documentaries and reality shows. Mm-hmm. So in the past, we've done a lot of like Rock of Love and Terrace House and The Staircase, and Evil Genius, all sorts of stuff. Basically, this year, we did four. So if you were a documentary or a reality show, you're included in this category as a nominee.
Yeah.
I think based on what we've already said, let's just take Perfect Bid right off.
Yeah,
there, right?
Take that right
okay,
off.
Okay, that is out of here.
Was it last year that we did Staircase and...
Yeah, I looked through
it? Smart.
Staircase,
smart
evil, genius, evil Genius. Smart Person. Yes. Smart Person.
Evil Genius and Staircase were such good documentary series.
They were fantastic.
They were so good.
They were really good. So here we've got three options. So we got Fire, which was the Netflix one. We didn't watch the Hulu Fire documentary. The Boy Band Con about Lou Pearlman, the manager of NSYNC, turned out to be a real piece of shit. And Terrace House. Now, keep in mind, this Terrace House is like the tail end of Boys and Girls in the City, is what is eligible for the Panty Award this year. All right. I liked Fire. I thought Fire was fun. I thought it was a effective way of telling that insane story. I think it did a good job of showing the people that got screwed over, like on the ground that were working and everything. And like, there was the story that came out afterwards that like, I think like a GoFundMe or whatever helped those people out, which is a nice end to that story. But I remember being like, they had some interesting footage. I know they didn't have the interview with the main guy, like the Hulu one had, but they had that footage of him like trying to put together that weird thing even after he had gone through this whole fire thing and painted a picture of this guy being just a real turd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that guy sucked. This whole fire festival story itself is so fascinating. And I think the fact that this Netflix documentary and the Hulu documentary kind of came out around the same exact time, right?
Oh, I think it was like the same week or so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it speaks to how compelling the story is. And I don't remember anything particularly remarkable about the documentary storytelling itself, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's kind of interchangeable between this and the Hulu one. For that reason, I really enjoyed it. I don't know if it was my favorite reality programming this year because, you know, just the story is so compelling. I mean, the documentary didn't reveal anything to me that it wasn't already familiar with aside from his antics afterward, but
yeah, I'd say as someone who had only read a few articles about it and didn't see the Hulu documentary, that like I do feel like I have a really good grasp on what happened there, and I think that is thanks to the documentary. And I don't think that, you know, a documentary needs to be particularly flashy, or you know, sometimes it can just take a fascinating story and tell it well, and I think it did a good job with Fire. So overall, I really did like Fire quite a bit here. I think it would be in the running for my favorite. So I'm not ready to take that off yet. I want to hear what you think, because the Boy Band Con, that was a suggestion of yours. You grew up listening to boy bands in your youth. How did you feel that was?
The Lou Pearlman stuff was just really intriguing to me. Like Dan said, I was a huge fan of boy bands growing up, and I knew about the Lou Pearlman. I knew hearing about him as he was this like ingenue behind all these boy bands, and then I remember hearing about the fraud stuff and everything. So I was always really curious about that story and what this guy's deal was. He obviously did have something that a lot, like a certain drive or something that is missing from a lot of people to be able to recognize the potential in these kids and then kind of hone this perfect product, this music product. And then his downfall was just, you know, crazy. But the documentary itself, it was kind of meandering. There was like these random interviews with people that didn't really go anywhere. Like I remember Aaron Carter being interviewed. Do you remember?
Right.
And he was like vehemently positive.
Oh, he was the one guy. Yeah,
and this was filmed relatively recently, like way after the fraud stuff had come out. So I'm not really sure how he could say that after he's been proven to have fucked many people out of their life savings. Like, his con is not just the boy band stuff. He didn't just con the boy bands out of money. It was, he had this own, like, Ponzi scheme type of thing. So he screwed innocent families out of their retirement savings. Like, their whole life, they worked to accumulate retirement savings, and he screwed them out of it. It's the most, it's one of the most evil things you can do. So he fucking sucked.
Yes.
But it also like touched on like maybe he was, there was a weird sex thing with him and the young boys.
Alluded to him like putting cameras and stuff in places. And
So it, there is a really good story there. I wish it would have stuck to that and not maybe touched on these things that it really didn't, because it really didn't go anywhere with that stuff.
It didn't really explore it. It would just kind of flirt with certain things and then never really come back to them.
Yeah. That being said, I'm very grateful that this documentary exists. It's a really interesting story. And, you know, it's not a super unique story. People are always trying to take money from musicians. It's fucking crazy. I wouldn't fight for this. This isn't the hill I'm going to die on. But I do recommend, if you're even remotely interested in the story, definitely check that documentary out. I think it's on YouTube TV.
It's on YouTube Originals, yeah. Okay, so do you not want to take this off yet?
We could take it out. I don't think I would fight for that.
Okay, then it comes down to Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened, or Terrace House. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking about the back half of Terrace House. We're talking about a lot of like Armand and Arissa. And, man, it's been a while. This is like the beginning of the year, I want to say.
Mm. Well, we had the meat incident.
The meat incident. Actually, I looked it up. I don't think the meat incident was during the stretch of episodes. I think it was right before it.
Oh. Yeah. Well, anyway, the Armand alone, I feel like, is the reason why Terrace House should be our favorite reality program of the year. But Terrace House itself is, it's just such a plain matter-of-fact presentation. It doesn't do any crazy editing. Like, the editing that takes place is kind of, you know, the editing that the participants themselves do while they were strategically keep themselves away from the cameras, which we'll get into that later.
Right.
But it's just presented so plainly. It's such an interesting window into Japanese culture and social norms and the life of young people in Japan. And, you know, what their expectations are, what the expectations are of them, and how they judge each other, and how different it is from, you know, what life is like in the U.S. And there's a lot of similarities, but how it different, like, the differences are so interesting and compelling to me. I love Terrace House. Not to mention, it's an addictive show to watch. I mean, it feeds that, you know, the romance thing that you want to see from reality shows, and there's always some kind of conflict that's like, a lot of times it'll be over the most inconsequential thing, like the meat thing I alluded to, which granted was in the previous year, but it's a great show. I love Terrace House.
And actually, yeah, just you talking about it here reminded me that there was some really interesting stuff in the ones we watched this year, like, you know, the Rico Penn stuff, which I know we're going to talk about later. And I hadn't really thought about that show in a while. And the way they present everything is just really, I think, incredibly well done. So, yeah, okay, you mentioned that you think Terrace House should win this?
In my opinion, yes.
Okay, so that's your vote. I was leaning towards Fire before, but honestly, I think you make a good argument that Terrace House and the way it's presented is exceptional, whereas Fire is probably mostly the story. I think Fire was a good documentary. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think the style of documentary making of Terrace House will get my vote too.
Excellent.
So the Panny Award for best, I'm sorry, the Panny Award for favorite reality programming goes to Terrace House.
Congratulations, Terrace House.
Congratulations. And we will go over to the survey for the survey results. The audience award for favorite reality programming goes to Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City.
We are people of the people.
Yes, with 46.46% of the vote. Up next was Fire with 36%. And then way down there with 8 and 9%, respectively, were Perfect Bid and the Boy Band Con. Hmm. So, that's pretty much kind of exactly how we went with it. Yeah. So, hey, audience, you're right there with us. All right, that is it for favorite reality programming. Let's move on to the next category.
Best Quirk.
And the nominees are Todoroki with Half Cold, Half Hot.
Deku, One for All.
Momo, Creation.
Shinso, Brainwashing.
Tokoyami, Dark Shadow.
Toga, Transform.
Yuga, Naval Laser. Okay. These are some good quirks.
They are some quality quirks.
There are a lot of quirks for those that did not watch My Hero Academia or listen to those episodes. These are all from My Hero Academia. These are superpowers, basically.
These are superpowers. So I think maybe we should consider first and foremost the limitations of the quirks and not just accept them at face value. For instance, no one's going to deny that Tokoyami's Dark Shadow is fucking badass.
It is.
He has this giant demon that gets unbelievably strong at night and he can't even control it, and it will kill everything in its path. It's awesome, but it's really hard to control. It's not like he has free reign over this thing.
It can revolt on you, basically, like it did in the forest training arc.
Yeah. And, you know, Yuga's navel laser, it's awesome, but his tummy will start to hurt.
I'm not ready to take navel laser off yet.
We don't have to take it off yet. I'm just saying we have to consider the fact that it's not just a navel laser that he can use with reckless abandon. His tummy will hurt.
Well, let's clarify this, though. Are we talking about, is this our quirk that we would like to have, or is this the one that we think was the most entertaining within the context of the show? You see what I mean?
I was approaching this as just like, what do I think is just generally the best? Like, even
like if you were to have your own quirk.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll take that angle with this here.
Okay.
Okay. So yes, I was going to argue Dark Shadow is one of my favorites for sure. I think it's a really cool one, but yeah, that would be, there are drawbacks to it for sure.
Brainwashing.
We'll take Dark Shadow off?
Yeah, we could take Dark Shadow
off. Okay.
Is it Shinso or Shinsu?
Shinso.
Shinso. I love that quirk. I feel like it's something that you could use every day and no one would even know that you're using it. It's not flashy, but you can fucking conquer the world with that quirk.
You'd be rich immediately.
Yeah.
You'd get anything you ever wanted.
Yeah. And I feel like that, like, if you want a more subtle, everyday, like, you can, this is a very practical quirk that you can use in your everyday life. Brainwashing is great.
Yes, I would say the same with creation.
Definitely.
So I think those are two top level ones here. Let's just real quick, let's just name what we think the coolest one is.
Half cold, half hot.
Yeah, that's probably the coolest one, even more than Dark Shadow.
Yeah.
And it's just used so cool in the
show. It's used so cool. If I was a hero in this universe, that would be the coolest fucking ability to have. You're shooting ice and fire out of yourself.
Yeah, like, and as it's presented in the show, like, brainwashing is cool for the purposes of this category of, like, something we would want, but it's not as fun to watch as half-cold,
half-hot. In a heroic situation, half-cold, half-hot would be the coolest and, I feel like, the most practical. I mean, you have...
Right.
You can freeze and you can burn. I mean...
Giant waves of ice and fire.
Yeah, in an instant.
Okay, so an honorary Panty Award for coolest quirk would be half cold, half hot.
Definitely.
And funniest will be navel laser.
Yes.
Right?
I suppose it is funny. His tummy does hurt.
And he makes a very silly sound when he humps the air and shoots a laser out of very close to his crotch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, back to what we would want the most. Toga's transform is cool.
But you do need the blood, and that's an issue.
And for an average, you know, Joe and Jane like me and you, I don't think we're going around collecting blood.
No. How would you even do that?
Yeah, if you could just T-1000 transform into anyone, even that you know, like the T-1000 had to touch someone, like that'd be easy enough to brush against someone, and then you can just like add them to your Shang Tsung Rolodex or whatever. But yeah, as presented in the show, I don't think transform would be that useful for us.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Okay. Transform is off. And I guess navel laser, you know, funniest, one of the most entertaining. But come on, how often are we going to use a navel laser?
Especially one that hurts your tummy.
It does hurt his tummy. I also like, is it Dinky with the electric power that makes him stupid?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Okay, so we've got half cold, half hot, one for all, creation, and brainwashing. I would argue here, one for all and half cold, half hot, not useful in normal life. We wouldn't want that.
No, I feel like one for all, useful only in heroic battles.
Yes, and half cold. Well, half cold, half hot, if you could like actually like do minute little bursts and stuff. If you could like heat up a pot of boiling water real quick or like roast a marshmallow. If you just do like a little tiny like flame.
Well, you
ice.
Could do that on the stove.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had, I mean, what a cool party trick if it's like, oh, my beer, it's
well, okay, but you're comparing that to brainwashing, like that's,
it's not gonna win. It's not gonna win. I just want to give
win.
It. I just want to say my piece.
Definitely the coolest. Deku, the same. It's very cool. Obviously, he has with that power, he has the potential to be the greatest hero in the world. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, I like to help people when I see an opportunity to do so, and when it's not like a huge burden on me financially, or you know, if I have to go out of my way or something. But I don't want to be a hero that, you know, saves people from evil villains.
And it's also scary because, like, let's say you are trying to save someone or use it for whatever reason, mm-hmm. and you jump really high in the air to punch something or whatever. Mm-hmm. He just falls and, like, his legs and arms get screwed up and, like, he's constantly getting injured and, like, risking the loss of his limbs.
Yeah.
Good for his purposes. Good mm-hmm. for the show.
Good for the
for
show.
Sure. Not the one I would want.
Agreed.
So we'll take one for all off?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Momo's creation, she can only create, like, things that are inorganic, right?
I believe so. She can't create, like, a frog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she has to eat a lot of lipids and a lot of fat.
Oh,
they call
about
it
that.
Lipids in the show. So she needs to eat a ton to be able to fuel her ability. And that even means in really tense situations, stopping the action to eat and then, you know, create. But as far as everyday life, I mean, it would be nice to, like, oh, I want a longer USB-C to charge my phone. I could just make it instead of having to order one off Amazon.
Or I need a car. I need a car with a full tank of gas.
We haven't seen her make a car. That's bigger than her. How would that come out of her body?
Oh, does it actually have to come out of a person?
It does.
It's not just like from midair.
So I don't know if that's a rule. I'm just saying I've never seen her make anything that's bigger than her.
That's a good point. It always has been like weird little things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, weird little things, like if I just need something random, I just order on Amazon. It comes the next day. It's not like that crazy expensive. And I'd be choosing that over some, you know, really cool stuff. Yeah.
It would be convenient at times, but it wouldn't like change just full social engineering of society and where you are in life. Like, I mean, any job you ever wanted, you could just be like, oh, hire me, you know,
yeah.
or like... Yeah, you could do anything. You could become the ruler of the world.
Even in battles in the context of shows, Momo needs to... She's kind of more a support character because she does need to rely on other heroes to assist her, whether that means using the stuff she makes or carrying it or whatever.
Yeah.
She can't really stand on her own.
Okay, so it sounds like we're both ready to cut Momo.
Yeah.
And, okay, so that leaves Half Cold, Half Hot and Brainwashing and, you know... I think Brainwashing is the winner here, right?
Totally.
Okay. So our vote goes to Brainwashing from Shinso.
Congratulations.
Congrats. That is the official Panty Award winner. Now let's go over to the audience vote. And the winner, resounding winner with 32.63% of the vote, Todoroki, Half Cold, Half Hot.
Okay. I see why. I mean, that is the coolest.
It is definitely the coolest. And number two... Naval laser, Yuga, which, yes, I definitely see, I think, if there was any confusion over what that category was. Mm. If this was coolest quirk, I would probably go in the same order, too, with Half Cold, Half Hot, and then Naval Laser. And following up on that, from number three on down, is Deku with One for All, Dark Shadow, Creation, and then tied for last, Toga's Transform and Shinsa with Brainwashing.
I get it. I think that if... they knew the context that we were describing, like everyday life use.
I probably could have telegraphed that more. So,
but that being said, Todoroki's, I mean, that is the coolest fucking
Todoroki
quirk.
Is the, if the category was coolest quirk, Todoroki definitely wins.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. All right, on to the next category.
Worst performance.
And the nominees are Alan Bagg as Rod in Birdemic, Shock and Terror.
Jaina Camp, Jaina, Love on a Leash.
John Travolta as John Gotti in Gotti.
John Travolta.
What?
He said John Travolta.
I did?
Yeah.
Leave it.
Keanu Reeves, Jonathan Harker, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Whoever did Val Kilmer's voice, The Snowman.
YK Kim, Mark, Miami Connection.
Oh, boy. Looking at this list, honey.
This is a beefy list.
This is a murderer's row of unbelievably terrible performances.
Okay. Can I just, right off the bat, just get one off here just to make this?
Yes.
So, YK Kim, Miami Connection, no one is going to argue that that is an amazing movie. But what it does have is so much heart. That YK Kim cared so much about that movie. The way it was shot, he did so much with such a small budget. He gave it his all. Like, you could tell. He trained. He wanted to show off his ability. He wanted to inspire other people to take up the martial art that he was the master of or whatever.
Yeah.
And even though he was a terrible actor and you couldn't ever understand anything that he was saying, I don't think he deserves the worst performance because he had so much heart.
That's a good point, because like compared to someone like Alan Bagg, who was literally just a guy that you know, the director pulled in for this, like that had no skin in the game or anything, he just kind of showed up and was terrible at the one thing he was supposed to do. I don't think YK Kim hangs here.
All right,
we'll take him off. I will also offer up one to get rid of. John Travolta as John Gotti is terrible. It is a terrible movie. John Travolta has never been a good actor, and this is a particularly rough performance. That said, it's hard to say John Travolta is a worse actor overall than like the Alan Baggs and Jonna Camps of the world here.
Yeah, I think that context is important. And while John Travolta is not a good actor, this entire movie was terrible. Like, there really wasn't any redeeming quality of this movie. The writing was terrible. All the acting was pretty bad. And if nothing else, he definitely gave it 150%.
Yeah, he was going for it.
He was really going for it.
And he is, frankly, a better actor than a lot of the other people on this list.
Yeah, so I think that we can cut John Travolta.
I think we can use the same argument for Keanu Reeves as Jonathan Harker, but boy, oh boy, is it worth noting how terrible Keanu Reeves' accent is in that movie.
Well, here's the thing. I think, like I said, context is critical here, and I loved that movie.
Yes.
I think Gary Oldman was incredible in that movie. I thought Winona Ryder was great. The whole movie was weird and wacky and really campy in a way that I love. He was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
But he was made so much more horrible because of the trappings of the movie. By contrast, he was so bad. And for that reason, I'm hoping that we can keep Keanu on this list a little bit longer.
Let's keep it on a little bit longer here. That is a good point. Because, like, I look at the Alan Baggs and the Jonna Camps here, and, like, they are two of the worst actors I've ever seen in my entire life. But also, everything that they're surrounded with Love on a Leash and Birdemic, is absolute garbage.
It's terrible. They're rising to the level of what is right in front of them.
It all fits in this perfect, cornucopia of shit. Whereas, Keanu Reeves stands out like a sore thumb amongst, like, some awesome, like, Francis Ford Coppola direction in one of the most classic novels of all time, and some incredible performances and visual effects. Like, Bram Stoker's Dracula is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I loved it.
Keanu, okay, all right. I don't know if I can back him winning this, but I'm with you on keeping it a little bit. Okay, Val Kilmer's voice. Again, we have to call attention to how terrible
it was. It was terrible. And, you know, just even being nominated is an honor, they say.
Yes, of course.
So I think it's good that we're acknowledging this. That being said, it would be really hard to mouth along or to try to speak while someone's mouthing along. You know what I mean? It's got to be hard to do that. At least, like, in a Pixar movie or something, like, they can animate the mouth to go along with, you know, whatever the voice actor is saying. But, you know, you really can't do that. And I don't think they probably had a ton of time with Val Kilmer.
And like, while the performance itself is not particularly good, it is more the circumstances that make it so noticeable. Where it's like, wait, no, we've heard Val Kilmer. That's not Val Kilmer's voice. That's the more distracting thing to me than, like, out of context, if that was just that dude reading those lines in that way in a different movie where it wasn't Val Kilmer and it wasn't the fucking snowman, I might be like, oh, okay, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So, but worth bringing up.
Definitely. Now,
so we'll take that off here. So that leaves us with Alan Bagg from Birdemic, Jonna Camp from Love on a Leash, and Keanu Reeves from Jonathan Harker. Is Jonna Camp worse than Alan Bagg?
Or Jaina, or possibly Jana?
Yeah, it's J-A-N-A. We don't know. Also, the actress's name is the same name as her character. That was not a creative decision. It couldn't have been. I think they just
didn't name her.
Didn't want to. Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay, but hear me out, Dan.
Okay.
She had to act as though she was in a relationship with a dog.
That's correct.
That's a lot to ask of a person.
Correct.
She also was, like, forced to wear these terrible extensions for the first half of the movie. She was, you know, put in this weird situation for one scene where she had to raise, like, the president's son or some shit. Oh, right. Like, there's so much weird stuff that was thrown at her. And if Alan and Jana are going head to head, I think that Jana was definitely superior.
Yes.
In that she kind of did the best she could with what was going on. She is not a good actress.
No.
But Alan was just kind of like, ugh, just...
Alan's distractingly terrible in what is maybe the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yes.
And I said that about Love on a Leash before I saw Birdemic.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I think we both agree that Alan is worse than Jana. Now, let me ask you this. Is it more believable that Jana Camp was in love with the dog or that Keanu Reeves was British?
So, as far as believability, I mean, is that what this category is
about?
No,
I'm just picking your brain.
Just picking my brain. Well, it's a big ask to be in love, you know, sexually with a dog. That's something that I can't understand.
Right. I'm glad.
There's just, I don't know. It's Keanu Reeves, really, he had to step up his game, and he just failed so miserably.
But what I'm hearing here is, I think, are we both good with Jana getting taken off this list?
I think so. I think she did the best she could.
Okay, so we're coming down to Alan Bagg as Rod and Keanu Reeves as Jonathan Harker. I will put my vote in for Alan Bagg because the category being worst performance, my God, it's some of the worst acting I've ever seen in anything. I'm talking like high school, you know, made for YouTube videos, things like that. Granted, not a lot to work with by any means. But you do make a solid argument with Keanu and how much he stands out. Like, the performance is so bad, it extremely stands out in an otherwise great movie.
And the thing is, Alan's performance is on par with the quality of the rest of the film. And I suspect that Alan, this is probably his first acting gig.
I certainly have not heard of him.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves at this point had done a lot of notable movies. I mean, he was a heartthrob. That's the only reason he was cast to begin with.
Yeah.
So he was an actor. He theoretically could have done better. and it stands out so much. Like, when I think about that movie, I think I love Gary Oldman, and Keanu Reeves was laughable.
You make a strong argument. Ultimately, I'm going to put my vote in for Alan Bagg.
Okay, I'm with Keanu at this one.
Okay, so we have our first split here that will be determined by the audience. So I'll read the number one audience vote, and then if it is different, I will say which one of ours was higher. So for worst performance from the audience, number one, by the way, this is the first time I'm seeing these two, is with 43%, which is like three times more than any other one, is John Travolta as John Gotti. I mean, yeah, I get it, horrible people. Yeah. Yes. All right, so out of our two, and this will determine the worst performance. Let's see, it was between Alan Bagg and Keanu Reeves. Oh my God. A one vote difference. Worst performance goes to Alan Bagg.
All right, Alan.
For Birdemic.
You bagged it up, baby.
He wins the first split vote in the Panty Awards history. Alan Bagg as Rod in Birdemic, Shock and Terror.
Wow.
Wins the Panty Award for worst performance, with the audience favorite going to John Travolta from Gotti.
Congratulations, right. Alan Bagg.
That was a bloodbath. All right, and with that, we'll move on to our next category.
Best Performance.
The nominees are Chris Sabat as All Might, My Hero Academia.
Jim Carrey, the Cable Guy in The Cable Guy.
Tom Hardy as Charles Bronson in Bronson.
Gary Oldman, Count Dracula in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Rosa Salazar as Alma Winograd Diaz in Undone.
Brad Pitt as Jeffrey Goines in 12 Monkeys.
Rico Pym from Terrace House.
Nev Campbell as Sidney Prescott in Scream.
Paul Rudd as Miles Elliott in Living With Yourself.
Tilda Swinton as Mason in Snowpiercer.
And finally, Mahershala Ali as Wayne Hayes in True Detective Season 3. A lot of great performances here. Mm-hmm. And it's a big category, so let's start chopping off at the ones that aren't going to hang here. I think Paul Rudd does a great job in Living With Yourself. Mm-hmm. As we said earlier, he is the highlight of the show. I think he's pretty much just playing Paul Rudd slightly differently, two different
Agreed.
Ways. I think it's, you know, there's some nuance that he clearly brings a lot of comic sensibilities and subtlety to the performances, but this is a stacked category.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so we'll take him off.
Tilda Swinton, I loved her character in Snowpiercer, but it was a really small role.
It was. I think she kind of commanded the screen every time she was up, and I really, she made me laugh a lot. And in a wacky movie, I think she had a wacky character that she performed perfectly and fit right in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not as substantial as some of the other huge performances in this.
You know, Dan, the guy who directed Snowpiercer, Bong Joon-ho, he also directed Parasite, which we loved. But he also directed Okja on Netflix. Have you seen that? I think I watched it when you were at home one night.
No, I haven't seen that.
But yeah, he directed that, and Tilda Swinton has a big role in that
too.
And she also plays this like kind of eccentric weirdo. So he clearly likes Tilda Swinton, and I recommend checking that out.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, I like his work a lot from what I've seen. I really like Snowpiercer. But yeah, I solid argument. Tilda, we'll take her off.
Neve Campbell.
Yeah, perfect for what Scream was. I think Scream is one of the most perfectly cast movies we've seen on this show. So, but yeah, it's not as demanding a role as some of these others for sure. We have to give a little bit of credit to Rico Penn here from Terrace House. The reason she makes it on Best Performance, even though it's a reality show, is she basically had everyone fooled into thinking she was squeaky clean, virginal, idol, you know, woman for the purposes of the show, while having a clandestine affair with the chef guy,
the
right?
Weird chef guy.
The weird chef guy, yeah.
So I guess in Japan, one of the things I learned from Terrace House is that if you're an idol or a model or whatever, you really want to preserve your reputation. So these participants would be very careful about, you know, the kind of persona they put forth when they were on camera. Rico Penn acted from the jump like she was this quiet, like virgin, never had sex, like wouldn't kiss someone, wouldn't hold someone's hand if they weren't boyfriend and girlfriend, like just very, you know, kind of uptight chastity, Lily White.
Didn't he even ask to see the fireworks? She was like, that's moving too fast.
Yeah, exactly. Like just absurd. And not to mention, she was just very quiet and just, it came out in this really shocking confrontation that Rico Penn and this weird chef guy who's also in Terrace House, I forget his name, were having this affair and like sleeping with each other when the cameras weren't around.
Yeah, like meeting each other in the elevator and like going outside the house or whatever to sleep with each other. Yeah.
Right. Now, granted, I don't speak Japanese, so maybe she wasn't a really good actress, but right. In my mind, she just seemed like a really good actress.
It's the only eligible best performance from Terrace House.
Yeah. But I don't think, obviously, she deserves to win this award. But I think it is definitely worth mentioning.
You think Rico Penn has ever gone up against Gary Oldman for an award? Okay. Very different people. All right, we'll take out Rico Penn. But yeah, she had us fooled for a bit. All right, let's take off one or two more, and then we'll read where we're at.
Okay.
I think Rosa Salazar was great as the star of Undone. I thought she was really added a lot of personality to that role. We really liked that show a lot. I don't know how many people watched that show. I don't really hear a lot of people talking about it, but I thought it was great, and I thought she was a big part of what made it great.
Yeah, she was awesome. I feel like it's a hard job because the big question of that show and what makes it so compelling is this question of, is what we're seeing actually happening? Does she have this power, or is she losing her mind like her, you know, grandmother, like her father were? And she had to walk that line between keeping us kind of wondering if she was losing her mind or if maybe this was a legitimate thing. And that's got to be a tough job.
Yeah.
I think that it's hard to judge her against the other people in this category because the fact that it was rotoscoped or animated in the way that it was, I feel like took away some of the subtleties of her performance.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just being kind of critical here, but I mean, it was great, but I don't think it was, you know, necessarily worthy of comparison to like Mahershala Ali or something.
No, but worth pointing out as one of our favorite performances of the year. Also added just real good like comic sensibility to that show.
Totally.
I think she was very likable and a sympathetic character for sure.
Definitely.
So, but we will take her off. But Rosa Salazar, great performance. All right, let's take one more off and then we will read where we are at. Boy, these are some good ones. Brad Pitt, I know he was nominated for the Oscar for 12 Monkeys.
Didn't he win?
I think he did win Best Supporting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good performance for sure. Watching it now, I think it kind of reeks a bit of 90s out there wacky, I'm crazy, I'm in the asylum, you know. It's just like not in the way that I like found it offensive or anything, but it just seems like, wow, I'm crazy. It's like the Sweating Bullets video of Megadeth, where it's just like that 90s, like, wow, crazy, yeah. You know, like yeah. Lots of like, you know, real manic tics. And he does it really well.
Yeah, it seems to come naturally. Like he clearly, you know, tried really hard to mm-hmm. get these mannerisms down. But I agree. It's hard to, you know, acknowledge it as a really good performance when it's turned up to 11 the whole time. And it's not necessarily realistic. But he did toe the line between, like, kind of vaguely threatening or could possibly be a genius, an evil genius, or he actually just turned out to be, like, a dumb guy who was losing his mind.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he did a great job in that role. But for me, he wasn't, like, my favorite, at least compared to the other candidates.
I agree. I also don't think that, like, you know, realism and things like that or turning up to 11 should be a knock against, because, you know, you look at, like, Dracula or, like, Jim Carrey as the Cable Guy, and these are, like, loud, out there characters, you know, not real, like, the Cable Guy. I don't know if there are human beings like Jim Carrey's Cable Guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, I agree. But, I mean, there's something you said about, like, a more, you know, it doesn't need to be subtle. It's just when it's so extreme, I feel like it's, you know, not as impressive to just be an extreme character that wouldn't necessarily exist in real life. Where Jim Carrey, I get your argument with Jim Carrey, but I loved his performance in The Cable Guy, but he, in my mind, was just being what Jim Carrey is always being. And this was such a huge departure for Brad Pitt.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, even if we are talking about the, like, super cartoonish, turned up, unrealistic character performances, which can be a lot of fun, I don't even think Brad Pitt's is the best of those. Of the loud cartoonish characters, because there are others in this category that I think do a better job of that. So are you thinking that he should stay for now?
Well, I think it was really good.
It was.
I think that, you know, compared to the others, I think we could maybe cut him since we're doing that. But I also think then that we should probably cut Jim Carrey, because I love the Cable Guy, and that was an amazing performance, and only he could play that character. But it was pretty much the same character he was playing, with this slight creepy edge. And I think he did that just by, like, being slightly inappropriate, being, like, slightly more oblivious and slightly more over the top in certain ways and, like, threatening. But I don't think it was, like, that big of an ask, especially when you consider, you know, the movies of the era.
Yeah.
His movies of the era.
And you're right. There is definitely a lot of, like, Ace Ventura DNA in The Cable Guy, of just kind of this very physical performance and over-the-top nature. But, like, I think he is so good at, in this movie, of having this slight, this menace. You know, this subtle mm-hmm. menace that is the new thing that I think is what elevates this over, like, the other 90s Jim Carrey performances. Where mm-hmm. it's like he's doing all that stuff that made everyone love Jim Carrey. But also it's just like, oh, man, this guy's nuts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were a lot of times where I found myself thinking, well, like, all right, he really wants a friend. And then I'd go to the next scene and be like, oh, shit, this guy is dangerous.
Yeah, even some of the, like, nightmare sequences where it's like his eyes would be glowing, or he'd be, like, chasing someone down a hall or something. Yeah. Like, it's just, like, he brings something to that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah, like I said, I can't imagine anyone else playing the Cable Guy than him.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if I'm ready to cut Carrie yet, so should we just read the five?
Sure.
Okay. Christopher Sabat as All Might, Jim Carrey as the Cable Guy, Tom Hardy as Charles Bronson, Gary Oldman as Count Dracula, and Mahershala Ali as Wayne Hayes. This is five incredible performances.
Tom Hardy, I thought, was incredible in that movie. Yeah. I wasn't huge on that movie, but it's got to be so challenging to star in a biopic, because you actually have someone that you're going to be directly compared against.
Yeah.
And even according to Bronson himself.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Hardy did a great job.
Oh, and the stuff he said about him afterwards. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, he's our greatest actor. He's like, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, he is an incredible actor. Yeah, I thought he was amazing in this, and really threatening and scary.
Yeah.
So Christopher Sabat, I feel like he's the best at that kind of voice. I mean, he was Vegeta, right?
He's Vegeta, Piccolo. He's a ton of, like, classic anime characters. And mm-hmm. I'm sure tons that I don't know of, because I basically just know Dragon Ball and My Hero.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the weird thing about these awards, is that what other awards are going to, you know, compare an anime voice from a couple years ago to a Francis Ford Coppola performance from Gary Oldman? It's hard to mm-hmm. qualify it. So, but at the end of the day, yeah, like, some of these other performances are just so, I don't want to say, you know, demanding physically and all that stuff, because I don't want to imply that, like, you know, voiceover work isn't demanding. Like, voiceover work is an incredible art, mm-hmm. for sure. So, but overall, it's kind of two notes for All Might. And that's the way the character's written. So this is no fault of Christopher Sabat. But right. It's like, there is like, I'm here, you know, the All Might thing. And then there's the, oh, hey, I'm weak, you know? Like,
right, yeah. And also, everyone's insistence that we do subs over dubs.
Oh.
Obviously, he wouldn't be a part of that. So
Right.
You know.
That seems to be an anime thing for sure.
Yeah.
I love the performance. I love the voice. I love the character. I love the show, obviously. But yeah... It's hard to pick it over some of these other ones.
I agree.
Okay. That leaves us with four. I would say Mahershala Ali is great in True Detective. Mm-hmm. He's obviously just one of the best actors out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a... Maybe we just lean towards more over-the-top performances or something. Or maybe I'm speaking for myself. But, like, his is a very, I think, realistic and, like... I think if we're talking like traditional like acting award type stuff, I think he definitely, you know, would probably win this thing. You know, mm-hmm. he is so subtle and like just the emotions he can put on his face and everything. You just buy every single thing he's saying and doing. Mm-hmm. And there are scenes in that show where he's young and he's pissed off and he's going through marital problems, or he's just like old and he's struggling with dementia, and like he sells all of it so hard.
Yeah, I mean, even when he's old, they have like prosthetics to make him look old.
Mm-hmm.
It's really well done. But what really is the most effective at making him look old is just the way he moves. Like, he moves like an old man. It's and that's not something you can, you know, use the prosthetic for or something. But
yeah,
it's an all encompassing performance. I mean, there's like moments of levity when he's with his wife, and there's just the utter confusion when he's an old man, and
the PTSD stuff when he's talking about the war and everything.
Yeah.
Like it's a role that spans decades, and he plays the same character. And man, when I first brought him up, I was thinking like, oh, maybe I'd cut him. It's kind of a subtle thing compared to these others. But like, now that we talk about it, holy shit, he was extremely good in this show.
Yeah, he was really good.
What are we? It sounds like you were looking at this now. I think I could see the argument for cutting Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love that movie and I love him in it, but just in terms of, you know, given the context of his other performances. It's clear that this was his shtick, and he had mastered it to the point where he was able to put this edge on it, which is obviously very admirable. But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily something that we value more than what the other guys are capable of.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, it's a subjective award here.
Totally.
And fucking love that movie. Love Jim Carrey. But, okay, we'll cut him. All right, and then there were three. Tom Hardy, Gary Oldman, and Mahershala Ali. Now, we haven't really talked about Oldman yet,
because
I think it's just such a known, just like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Like, what a fucking awesome portrayal of Count Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, one of the most, you know, he's been portrayed a million times on screen and one of the most famous characters in all of fiction. And man, he just has so much fun with that role.
Yeah.
And you get the two versions. You get the, like, young, kind of love-struck Dracula going through the streets, and then you've just got the crazy old, fucked-up Dracula.
Demon, yeah. The actual, like, in his home, sleeps in the dirt Dracula. Yeah.
You've got him as a bat, as a weird wolf thing. Like, he's all over the place in this.
Yeah, he's awesome. That opening scene for the movie is so good.
Jeez, with that awesome armor.
And he's screaming in, like, Transylvanian, Hungarian.
Romanian or something.
Whatever that was, Romanian.
Yeah. God damn it. All so three good. Of these.
Yeah.
I mean, any one of these I'd be happy with winning. It's just trying to decide on my vote here.
Yeah. I mean, I can't help but be swayed by the fact that I wasn't super into the movie Bronson.
Right.
That I would be okay with removing him.
Well, the thing is, too, we're gonna have time to do, you know, we're going to do best movie and best show and stuff later on. So divorced from how much we like the movie. Because, like, True Detective, you know, that was up for most mediocre, and we're still, like, seriously considering Mahershala Ali. So let's... Just the performance itself. I'm trying to think... this is... All three of these are just top of the line.
Yeah. I think the one that stuck with me the most was Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
So my vote goes for Gary Oldman.
Okay. Mine is... I think since mine is going between Oldman and Hardy... I think, as much as it sucks to do, I think I have to cut Mahershala Ali if neither of us... If you've already put your vote in and I'm deciding between two, I got to cut Mahershala Ali, but goddamn, he's so good in that show.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Oh, man. Okay, so the thing with Tom Hardy and, like, he has such a manic, intense performance in that movie. And, like just the fact that he was so devoted to being exactly like this absolutely insane cartoon character of a man, mm-hmm. you know, to the point where he was like emulating his crazy push-up routines and like his jail cell workouts and stuff to get like, you know, huge and mm-hmm. stuff like that. There is something about that level of just like crazy. I think I was about to say insane or crazy, and I said incrane. That's wow. Okay. Like, I don't know. Like, you hear about like Christian Bale like being an asshole and, you know, being jacked for Batman and then doing The Machinist and stuff like that. There is something about that that like I always just look at that stuff and I'm like, oh man, that's awesome. That's so cool that he does that. Mm-hmm. And Tom Hardy, I feel like, has that same quality. Mm-hmm. And I think it just comes through in that role so much. And like Dracula is awesome. Gary Oldman is incredible. But amidst just like a million other things that are super duper good, it's almost what we were talking about, like Keanu Reeves being distractingly bad. Mm-hmm. Tom Hardy, I love the movie Bronson. I love the directing. I love the story and everything. But like that movie is just the Charles Bronson story. He is that. He is on screen virtually that entire fucking movie. Whereas like Oldman, you know, there are large parts of Dracula where you're not seeing him. In fact, I think he's got a relatively small amount of minutes in that movie. Commands the screen every single second he's on. But I think the fact that Tom Hardy is such a part of Bronson every single scene and kills it, I think I'm going to give my vote to Tom Hardy.
Okay.
So that means it will come down to the audience vote.
The people.
And again, I will choose their number one. And then if it is different, I will have their vote come in. All right. Best performance audience winner. Christopher Sabat, All Might. Crowd favorite, My Hero Academia. Christopher Sabat wins the audience award for best performance, mm-hmm. which means, let me take a look at R2. We had Oldman and Hardy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a split vote.
Oh.
It is a tie. So I think we did not discuss what would happen, but I think that means...
Thumb war? Let's do rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors?
Okay.
Okay. So I got Hardy, you got Oldman.
Okay.
Okay, on three. Both scissors. Okay. She got scissors, I got paper.
All right. Goldman. All right. Oldman is.
I will take Tom Hardy off. The winner is decided by a very scientific process.
That's how they do it in the Academy Awards.
I think so. Yeah. It's like Sean Connery and like Kirk Douglas backstage doing that. All right. Best performance goes to Gary Oldman as Count Dracula. And the audience winner is Christopher Sabat, All Might.
Congratulations.
Congrats to the winners. Do you think they've ever met?
Mm.
They've probably been in the same room at some point. I don't know if they ever talked to each other.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
God, Razor keeps farting.
Yeah, he's good. Buddy, this is a fancy event.
I don't know. I didn't feed him anything weird.
Man. First annual awards. Farting up. All right, the next category.
Favorite moment.
The nominees are The Cable Guy infiltrates the family in The Cable Guy.
All Might versus All for One, My Hero Academia.
All Might inspires Deku to become a hero, My Hero Academia.
Eva Unit 1 goes berserk, Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Aim flirting, Pen 15.
Full circle at the airport, 12 monkeys.
And discovery of Baby Yoda, The Mandalorian. Good moments here.
Good moments. I think off the bat, I love Baby Yoda. He's adorable. Mm-hmm. But I feel like at this point, like, he's just become so memed.
It has. We literally had, like, the Today Show on this morning, and they were showing people how to make, like, holiday Baby Yoda cookies using, like, angel cookie cutters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, basically, we're saying, you know, we were the Baby Yoda hipsters, and we liked it before it was cool.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
We are.
So, we'll take that off. I will say there can only be one winner,
mm-hmm.
and between the two All Might ones, I love early on in the show, because all of our My Hero stuff was in the calendar year 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I loved early on in the show when he convinced Deku that, like, no, even though you didn't have a quirk or whatever, like, you can be a hero. And this
right.
is, like, he grew up obsessed with All Might, and to have him tell him that and inspire him and train him mm-hmm. and take him under his wing. Incredible, incredible moment to kick off an incredible show. But I just don't think it hangs against the fight.
Well, here's the thing. When All Might told Deku that he could be a hero, that was after we had met Deku and we learned that he grew up quirkless and having to accept that despite being so obsessed with heroes and absolutely fanatical about All Might. And he meets All Might for the first time. So we're used to seeing All Might at this point. But in this context of the first, like, episode or two of the show, like, All Might was this huge celebrity that he had never even seen in person before.
Right.
So for him to come after his whole life, like, kind of accepting that he was never going to have a quirk, but he still desperately wanted to be a hero because he wanted to help people, that was such a moving moment. I remember my eyes tearing up. I remember being so moved by it. And the All for One fight is an amazing fight. And it's obviously the culmination of so much stuff, and All Might retires and everything. But, you know, as far as me personally being moved, I think that All Might telling Deku that he could be a hero was a real special moment.
Yeah, and I think that was the moment, too, that, like, the show went from, like, in the early parts, it's like, oh, this seems like it's going to be a fun, wacky anime show. I can't wait to see everyone's powers and everything. Like, I like everything I've seen so far, to, like, that was one of the first moments that showed just how much heart the mm-hmm. show had. And be like, oh, wait, this is going to be, like, good on a different level than I expected.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the name of the show is My Hero Academia. I went in kind of with low expectations, thinking it was going to be just another, you know, teen-focused anime, but that showed me how much heart it had, like, right off the bat. It set the tone for the whole show and how inspirational it can be. And how, for Deku's character, too, I mean, it was so huge. It showcased how he just desperately wants to save people and help people and be like All Might, you know what I mean? It wasn't about the glory. It wasn't even about the crazy quirk, because he didn't have a quirk. But he never lost that drive.
Yeah, it's such a critical scene for two of the main characters in the show that really just sets the stage for, like, seasons worth of, like, character development.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really, goddamn, it's effective.
It's really good. That's why we're fresh off of the All for One fight.
Yeah.
And that is my favorite fight in the series for sure so far. But just in terms of, like, favorite moment for me, like, I don't know. It takes a lot for something to move me emotionally like that did.
Yeah, and they keep flashing back to it as well, of them kind of, like, standing there with the sunset, standing on the road, and, like, mm-hmm. what a cool scene. All right, let's not cut either of those yet.
Okay. I think we can cut Pen 15, AIM 40.
Yeah, great. Like, I think it struck both of us, because, like, we both definitely had that, like, chat
Absolutely.
Room 90s AOL experience.
And
everything.
It looked like it was an exact replica of the same interface and everything, sounds.
These sound effects were, like, triggering things in my brain that had not been, you know, neurons were firing
that
hadn't
door
gone in 20
opening.
Years. Yeah, and just the screen names and everything.
Yeah,
and
so
just
she wanted her screen name to be Viper 911, but that was taken, so she did Diaper 911, which is really funny. And then I forgot the name of the characters, but the other girl, like, when she was typing, she just types, like, "What's up?" Like,
yeah,
just the
yeah.
most, like, early 2000s shit. And I don't know, that struck a chord with me. But
in a show that, like, nailed that era so, so well, I think that was the most, like, crystallized, like, nostalgia in the whole thing. It's like, oh man, this is rings so true.
Oh my
to
god,
me.
Absolutely. And up until Pen 15, like, that era nostalgia hadn't really been tapped into yet.
Totally.
It's when I grew up. I grew up at that era when I was in fourth, or when I was in sixth grade, like, people started to use AIM and stuff. Like, it was the same time for me, so.
It somehow threaded the needle of both of our school nostalgia, mm-hmm. even though we're, you know, many years apart. Many. What, seven? But, like, you know, I was older and stuff, mm-hmm. but I definitely remember being in school and using AIM and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, definitely rang true for both of us.
Totally.
Oh, even the kids with the like Mankind and NWO shirts. It's like, oh my God. It wasn't just the obvious shirts. Like that Mankind shirt was such a fucking like 1999 ass shirt. It was so good.
Obviously wrestling fans on the staff there.
Yes, yes. Love that. But yeah, not going to stand up against some of these other moments. I'll take off one of mine that I love and I've always loved this scene. The end of 12 Monkeys. I think they do a really good job of teasing it at the beginning without context when you don't know who this kid is or what he's looking at. And as things kind of all come together by the end and you kind of see the bad guy, you know, making it through with a, you know, it's like a grim ending to this movie.
It is.
And it kind of goes against the genre and the usual formula.
Well, it's not entirely grim. I mean, they fulfill their objective and.
Right. Yeah,
but it is sad that essentially. He, you know, doesn't have a happy ending, I guess. But I love things that don't have happy endings. I really appreciate that. But
it's a dark ending. It's a dark, weird movie.
It is dark and weird. I feel like it's hard to compare. Like with the Cable Guy, too. That was so my favorite moment that I put on here from the Cable Guy was when
Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick goes to his girlfriend's house, and this is after the Cable Guy had been terrorizing him. He opens the door to see the Cable Guy there, and the Cable Guy smiles at him, and it's just like this sinking feeling. And then he just like manipulates his girlfriend's family so they all love him, and it's you realize that the Cable Guy has this guy's entire world in the palm of his hands.
Yeah,
like he just it's like a puppet.
Matthew Broderick can't do anything while like everyone's just falling in love with him, and he's just like hamming it up in the dumbest ways, like throwing those nuts in his mouth and stuff.
That being said, I feel like it's really hard to compare moments from movies to like these amazing moments from the TV shows that we watch because there's so much buildup and emotions tied to these things and context and background that we have and, you know, attachment to the characters in the shows. So it's kind of hard to compare the two. So with that being said, I'd be willing to take off the Cable Guy.
Okay, I'll take that off. And I'll take off 12 Monkeys here.
Okay.
So, wow, we are down to three anime moments here. The category is now Anime Moment of the Year.
Jeez, Razor is just farting like crazy.
He hates award shows.
All right. Okay, Eva Unit 1 going berserk in episode 19.
Mm-hmm.
That was a wild moment. It was like Shinji, if I remember correctly, Shinji had like, didn't want to pilot the Evas anymore. There was this angel that came and fucked up the other Evas, and it was like the last hope was for Shinji to get into Unit 1, and he does. And they fight, the Eva and the angel fight, and Unit 1 just goes berserk and like fucking like an animal just runs over and starts tearing apart the angel and eating it. It's just this bonkers moment in the show that I thought that I assumed wrongly that it would be like this the point where okay we're gonna learn more about what the deal is with these Evas. We didn't, but it was still a fucking bonkers moment.
It was, and it was just so weird to see them as like these military vehicles, basically, the Evas were. You know, they were very, you know, militaristic in every episode before that, and all of a sudden it's like running around like an ape and like eating things and like ripping off limbs, and it's just like this weird bloodlust. And I think they even implied the stuff about the mom and the soul and all that stuff. And just like, what is going on here? And I think if that had been fleshed out a little more, then maybe this would hang more.
Mm-hmm.
As it is, it's definitely the moment in that show that I was the most like, probably the most into the show.
Yeah.
Where I was just like, this is an awesome, cool mystery. Totally. Like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah. That whole, I feel like the way we split the show up, there was like, that episode was in the same block as like the episode where Misato like sleeps with that guy. It just got very real and very like dark and adult in a way that it hadn't been before. That was definitely the peak of the show for me.
Yeah, that like around episode 20-ish, like later, it's like, okay, we're past kind of just the Monster of the Week, Angel stuff, but we're like, we haven't gone full into, you know, just Bonkersville yet. Yeah, that was the peak of the show. I still, you know, even though we had some issues with things near the end, I like that show a lot.
Totally.
And that was probably my favorite moment, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So now we got oh god, that theme song. Oh man. Oh, maybe next year's Fanny Awards best opening / theme song. That would just be all different. Well, actually, no, it wouldn't be all My Hero ones because there's only the one we loved, and every other one has failed to reach those heights. All right. Favorite moment comes down to All Might versus All for One or All Might inspires Deku.
So I put forth my argument for All Might inspiring Deku.
Yep.
But the All for One fight, it is an awesome culmination, and that show is about the fights.
It is, and, you know, just from my personal taste in things and everything, like, I agree with everything you said about that inspiring Deku mm-hmm. to become a hero thing. Very affecting, very important for the show. But when it comes down to it, you know how much I love just a big, just balls out fight scene, you know?
Like, yeah, and I'm not, like, I love that moment, the moment early on, but I also love the All for One fight. So I would be happy to have that as our winner.
Okay. I think the thing that really seals it for me, on top of that just being just unbelievably animated and paced out fight and everything, is the part at the end where he's like, now it's your turn. Mm. And he points to the camera and everyone thinks, you know, it's more of a vague thing.
More about like the next bad guy or something.
But... yeah, and like that has such immense implications for the show of like, oh my God, this character that has been the number one hero all this time, mm-hmm. all of a sudden he's like pretty much officially passing the torch mm-hmm. on this very televised thing. And only Deku really knows what he means by it. Like,
right.
Oh my God, on top of it just being a great fight scene, that moment really killed me at the end. So do you want to, or are we going unanimous on that one?
We can go unanimous.
Okay. We have a unanimous decision. All Might versus All for One from My Hero Academia wins the Panty Award for favorite moment.
Congratulations.
And we will go to the audience vote. Favorite moment. Wow, we have a split audience vote.
Mm.
The audience vote is tied between All Might versus All for One, mm-hmm. My Hero Academia, and Eva Unit 1 Goes Berserk,
okay.
Neon Genesis Evangelion. Both great choices.
Yeah, great choices.
All right, and then looks like next up, Baby Yoda, always a crowd pleaser. and then the Cable Guy. Good to see the Cable Guy get some love here. And then the inspiring Deku to become a hero. Only one vote at the bottom was Full Circle at the Airport from Troll Monkeys. Good scene, but yeah, there's some stiff competition here for sure.
For sure.
All right, so that is our winner for favorite moment. Let's move on to the next category.
Worst thing we watched.
The nominees are Birdemic, Shock and Terror.
Love on a Leash.
Gotti.
Miami Connection.
The Snowman.
Blood Rain.
Puchinsky.
Ghoulies.
Okay, so worst thing we watch encompasses everything. Shows, movies, pilots that never made it to air.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when I think about this, like, there have been those times in the past. You know, we've done almost 100 episodes of Panning the Stream. And I think, when I think worst things we watch, I think the ones that we struggled. Where it's like, remember Battlefield Earth? Like, pausing it, and it's like, we have how much time left? Like, you know, if we had done the Panny Awards last year, I'd have to look at the list, but I feel like Battlefield Earth is a top shelf contender. With John Travolta, he's going to get a Lifetime Achievement Award with the panties at some point here. So that's what I think of here. But I could see arguments of just like straight up garbage, like Birdemic and things like that. Even though I was actually kind of amused by Birdemic the whole time.
Yeah.
And Love on a Leash. I say we cut Gotti.
We can cut Gotti.
Gotti, again, we've talked about it before. Terrible movie in every way, but more competently made than
Yeah, I agree. Miami Connection, I know it's a bad movie. It was terribly acted. But I feel like I really enjoyed watching it. Mm-hmm. I like the musical interludes.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier about YK Kim, he has so much heart. It was clear that this was just a really earnest movie, that they all gave it their all. There was, like, obviously so many probably friends that he got together to make this movie, and it wasn't half-assed like some of the other movies on this list.
No, and I think about some of the songs, too. I'll even, like, get in my head, like, friendship, honesty, loyalty. Like, I liked watching that movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it. I kind of like Miami Connection.
I kind of do, too. All right, we're cutting Miami Connection.
Let's do it.
All right. Puchinsky is just short enough and stupid enough that it's like, it's exactly what I thought it would be. It's what I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was not like a drag to get through or anything. I don't think it hangs here.
No.
Ghoulies, kind of. I thought Ghoulies, you know, it's not a good movie, but I don't know. It was exactly what I wanted from that, too.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it was exactly what we expected it to be. It wasn't as egregiously bad as some of the other movies on this list. It was as good as a movie called Ghoulies with that budget, with those special effects.
With the poster of a little gremlin coming out of a toilet.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what you would expect there.
Exactly.
All right, and so we whittled it down pretty quickly to four, mm-hmm. which is Birdemic, Love on a Leash, The Snowman, and Blood Rain.
Yeah.
All right, I'll say right now, Blood Rain sucks ass.
So bad.
These other three are worse.
I agree. I mean, it's so bad, and I feel so terrible that Christina Loken,
she
showed her tits for this movie. Like, it's not worth it for this movie.
Ben Kingsley appeared
in
this movie.
For no reason. Like, her boobs came out of nowhere. Like, there was no sexual tension between her and this guy, and then all of a sudden they're stand fucking, which I don't even think is possible.
Against a jail cell?
Against a jail cell, and her boobs are, like, I just feel so bad.
I just felt like Uwe Boll is like, we need some tits in this movie.
Yeah, I feel really bad. Like, make it some background actress. Don't make it her. I mean, she... I just feel bad for her. But yeah, that could definitely be taken off. I think when it comes to video game adaptations, the bar is already so low.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like it's on par with every other video game adaptation that's been made for the most part.
Yeah.
There's some ones that are actually okay, but...
Yeah. Okay, so then it's Birdemic, Love on a Leash, or The Snowman. I will say, of these three, two are of the same ilk. Birdemic and Love on a Leash, which is a, like... How did somebody put in the required time to make this?
Right.
And how did this make it to a wide streaming service? Mm-hmm. And that's Birdemic and Love on a Leash. Mm-hmm. Out of those two, we haven't had too much of a chance to talk about Love on a Leash yet. It's, like I said, it was the worst movie I'd ever seen before I saw Birdemic.
At least Birdemic has some semblance of a coherent plot.
The guy's got a message he's trying to do.
It's an hour... and 15 minutes of this rom-com, and then 15 minutes of birds fucking shit up. And with some messages about saving the environment and stuffed in between.
Some really, like, ham-fisted, like, not at all eloquently, like, sure, I get the message of, like, yes, global warming sucks and everything, and, like, we're doing damage to the Earth, but, like, he did not do it in an effective way at all. Like, it's not, like, he didn't even really explain how that directly tied to the birds freaking out and killing everyone and dive-bombing gas stations.
The one thing I will say in Birdemic's favor of it being worse than Love on a Leash is Love on a Leash really has this feeling that it was just a movie that someone made within a few days with their, you know, camcorder and whatever. I don't know what year this was made.
Right.
But I don't think it had any intention of being a good movie.
Right, whereas the Birdemic guy, yeah, I watched this Vice mini documentary about him, and like he considers himself like a student of the arts, and like he wants to be the new Hitchcock and stuff like that, and like he thought he was making great cinema. I don't think Love on a Leash thought they were making, I don't know who made it, but like I don't think they thought they were making great cinema.
Right, and another thing in Love on a Leash's favor for not winning this award is the dog is really cute, and that dog is in so much of the movie. So that definitely earned some points for me. And it had that weird Metal Gear-esque story that never goes anywhere. And I kind of liked that.
Yeah, they just mentioned it that one time, that mom being like, the son has to be the president of the United States.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
And that weird scene where they're all eating dinner, like, synchronized.
Raising their forks in silence, and using the same shot twice. It's a fascinating movie. If you did not see it, check it out. I think the whole movie's on YouTube and Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. Love on a Leash. I don't think it's the worst thing we
Your
saw
speakers
this year.
are working fine. Just for some reason, the sound just goes out inexplicably.
For long periods of time. Also in Birdemic. They both just turn off the sound at times. Just delete that track in Premiere.
Yeah, so much of Birdemic you can't even hear what's being said.
Oh,
but I think we can remove Love on a Leash.
Okay. I guess here's where we have to talk about The Snowman.
So The Snowman is such an anomaly. I feel like there's so many movies like Birdemic and Love on a Leash where it's just, you know, low budget, just random person wanted to make a movie, gathered together people that said they might have acted at some point, and, you know, just put it out there. Snowman is a big budget. It has an amazing cast.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender is in it. The guy who's in Shame.
It's based on books that people seem to like.
Yeah. It's just somehow fails so horribly. It's an absolutely incoherent plot. It meanders so much. It doesn't make any sense. The motivations are unclear. Like, the writing is so terrible. The sets are so weird. Remember all those windows everywhere?
Yeah.
Then there's the Val Kilmer stuff.
It is a confounding movie in ways that even Birdemic isn't, because Birdemic I could see because it's like, okay, it's a deluded guy that thinks he's got a message and ability to make films, and he made this on a shoestring budget, hired some actors that wanted any kind of work they could get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of see how Birdemic happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think Birdemic is objectively a worse movie,
but
The Snowman is so confounding on how it wound up being so bad. You had Scorsese behind it as a producer. And like you said, the cast is fantastic.
Yeah.
How did it wind up being this bad?
It's absolutely atrocious. And it's one of those things, like, I feel like we can't even explain all the ways in which it's bad. You just have to watch it for yourself. I remember when we were watching it, it was one of those movies where, like, when we paused, I was like, how do we have an hour or 40 minutes left of this movie or whatever? It was just... It was so
Remember
bad.
The scene with the weird punk show where everyone's sitting silently and watching the,
and
the
yeah,
like,
it's just someone screaming.
And, yeah.
There's so much weird stuff about this movie.
What is J.K. Simmons doing in that movie? Remember when he takes
oh,
the
yeah,
flash
J.K.
picture?
Oh, yeah,
J.K.
Simmons is in that movie. Chloe Sevigny is in that movie.
Oh, twice.
Yeah. I'm honestly, at least Birdemic has that novelty that redeems a little bit. It is so bad, and you go in expecting it to be so bad.
Yes, that's a good point, because Birdemic, we watched that with my dad.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I was really torn between mm-hmm. these two, because I didn't know how important the context was and all that stuff of, you know, well, this is surprising bad, this, you know, whatever. Birdemic, it seemed very, very long, mm-hmm. but I was laughing. Like, the act of watching it with you and my father mm-hmm. and seeing his reactions to this and seeing you and just like, oh, boy, we're from, like, minute one being like, oh, my God, we are in for it here. Like, it was an entertaining experience right. to watch. I could see a world in which I watch Birdemic again mm-hmm. and I show it to someone like, watch this thing. Mm-hmm. This is, it's The Room. It's so bad, it's good. Whereas The Snowman... No.
The Snowman is not even so bad it's good. It's just
right.
absolutely atrocious. It's not. I would never watch it again. Not for fun. Not to show someone you got to check out this terrible
movie. No, I can't recommend it to anyone. More people should watch Birdemic. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, I could definitely see myself watching Birdemic again. Snowman, not a chance. Not a snowball's chance in hell. I should have said Snowman.
do you remember when the bad guy dies by just falling into ice unprovoked?
Yeah.
Just, Harry Hole doesn't do anything.
Oh,
to
yeah,
cause
the guy's name is Harry Hole.
All right.
I forgot the guy's name is Harry Hole.
I think Snowman wins this.
Yes, okay. I agree.
Boy, I thought going in there was no way it wasn't going to go to Birdemic. But like, yeah, you're right. I would watch Birdemic again and show it to people and be like, hey, let's get drunk and watch Birdemic. Fucking no way am I watching The Snowman again.
Harry
no chance Hole. In heaven. God. Thanks, James, for that recommendation of that awful, awful movie. All right, let's see what the audience... I'm curious where the audience goes with this. Okay, so the audience winner for worst thing we watched. Oh, my God. Ooh, the top three are all one vote apart.
Okay.
The number three is Gotti. Mm-hmm. The number two is Love on a Leash. And the number one worst is Birdemic.
Okay.
Shock and Terror.
I was expecting that.
I was too.
I feel like that's very popular.
Yeah, and also I can't expect people to like watch The Snowman. Like we watch certain things for this podcast that we're like
we can't recommend.
I can't say, hey, you know, we'll do the tweet where it's like, here's what we're watching if you want to watch this.
Yeah.
But like I can't expect anyone to watch the goddamn Snowman. Also, I think we had to buy that one. Like they, oh man. The things we do. Blood Rain got some good votes here. Ghoulies came in last, so which means it, you know, probably did the best. Ghoulies is fine.
It is fine.
I like Ghoulies.
I like it too.
Okay, so the worst thing we watched 2019, The Snowman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay. Next category.
Best streaming service.
The nominees are Netflix,
Hulu,
Amazon Prime Video,
Disney Plus,
YouTube. All right, this should be an easy one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not YouTube.
Not YouTube.
And I think we're talking about like the original programming. We're not talking about like, obviously YouTube's got a jillion hours of stuff. We're talking about like stuff we watch for this, stuff that they make their own original content.
Mm-hmm.
Even with that, YouTube, we just watched the boy band story, and I think they've really backed off on, they did that Cobra Kai show. They've done a few little YouTube originals, but mm-hmm. I think they've backed off that considerably.
Yeah.
So, I'll also say Disney Plus. I like it more than I expected.
Same.
The Mandalorian and the stuff we did with the Disney shorts and the Pixar stuff. Really fun stuff.
There's just a wellspring of movies that you can go back and watch. Like
totally.
Every Disney movie, obviously, that's ever been, including all the old animated ones that I love. So it's a great service, but it just doesn't offer like it. I can't see it having this like ever updating catalog of stuff like the other services will have.
No, but for a cheaper service and also something that we just didn't really expect to like as much as we did. I'm glad we have it. I bet we will cover more stuff in the future from Disney Plus, but we'll take that off. So the big three, the three that we've kind of like built this podcast around from the beginning, Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime, when I think of their originals, like I know this wasn't this year, but like Jack Ryan sucked.
Undone was really
Undone
good.
Undone was good.
There was this show Homecoming with Julie Roberts that I really liked.
Okay.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Right. I know people like The Man in the High Castle, right? People like that.
I haven't seen it, but yeah. I mean,
you know,
HBO Go we didn't include in this, but
that's true. But like, that's also just like HBO, the TV channel shows.
True.
So like,
that's true.
It's not really their own original stuff or
that's
whatever.
True. Hulu, as far as originals, Handmaid's Tale, but that's
One. Yeah. I watched that Amazing Jonathan documentary. That was fine. Yeah, actually, as much as I like Hulu as a service for watching TV shows and things like that, I think for their original content stuff, I think we cut that even before Amazon here.
Yeah, I mean, oh, I think they had the one Mommy Dearest, the one Munchausen by Proxy.
Patricia Arquette?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really good. I forgot the name of it. But
I forget too, but I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, I mean, that's...
Okay. So it's going to come down to Netflix and Amazon Prime Video. Amazon Prime Video, you named several that, you know, they do some good stuff. I also think... I know we're not talking about all the other stuff that lives on the channel, but like it's really good for if I just like click Ghoulies and it's like, oh, I'm in the mood. We haven't done something like Ghoulies in a while. There is a ton of just like obscure stuff I can find of like, oh man, I haven't heard of any of this stuff. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot on Amazon Prime Video.
Amazon Prime Video doesn't really curate its stuff as much as the other services, which in our case is good because it gives us so many weird things that we never would have found out.
Totally.
But if we're judging it in terms of originals, I think Netflix definitely comes out ahead, especially, I mean, I know we don't really talk about a lot of this stuff on Panning the Stream, but there's so much like true crime stuff that I love to watch that's on like original stuff on Netflix. And I mean, it has so much original programming.
They do a ton of stand-up comedy. Like, you know, they definitely do a lot of quantity over quality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do so many shows, and I like, you know, a small percentage of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that small percentage is more than the other ones offer. So, yeah, I think we got to go with Netflix, right?
Yep, agreed.
All right, the winner of the Panty Award for Best Streaming Service 2019 goes to Netflix. Let's go to the audience survey. The winner... for the audience, best streaming service, also Netflix. It is unanimous.
Congratulations to Netflix.
A commanding win. Hulu came in second. Disney came in third, followed by Amazon and YouTube. So congrats to Netflix. They got some good stuff there, for sure. All right, and now we've got the final two categories. Let's go to number two.
Best show.
The nominees are The Mandalorian.
Dark.
Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Undone.
Pen 15.
My Hero Academia.
Russian Doll. I'll do some quick cuts here. I know we did two episodes on Dark. I think it was a cool show. I think there was some cool mystery to it, and I think they kind of deftly navigated a complicated story and made it about as easy to follow as you can a show like that. I like the acting. I liked it more once we turned on the subtitles. There's really good stuff there.
Yeah,
ultimately,
crazy story. It's hard to tell a story like that without getting really incoherent and difficult to follow, but I feel like it told it remarkably well.
Yeah, and we haven't seen the season two or anything like that. I think I've heard mixed things about that. But as far as the first season that we watched, I liked it. It's not going to win this.
Agreed.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Do you have one you would like to offer to cut?
Russian Doll.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked the premise. I love the Groundhog Day scenario thing. It's something I like to think about a lot. But after the first few episodes, it got kind of exhausting. Once it just came down to like, all right, we're trying to figure this out, and what is the deal? Like the first few episodes was like an investigation. Like she went to find the person who like her drug dealer or whatever to see what that was, and that went down. Like that was the route. That was a dead end. And then everything up until she met the other guy who was experiencing the same thing I thought was really good, but then it kind of petered out for me.
Yeah, I think it did a pretty good job of like presenting that Groundhog Day thing that we've seen in several movies and shows, and having like I thought it was just going to be another one of those at first, but it does introduce its own little fun twists on it and everything. But yeah, I don't think it holds up against a lot of these. I'll offer up The Mandalorian. Disclosure here, you know, we only covered the first two episodes for the podcast. I think we're two behind now in the show. I've liked the show a lot. It's really good. I've heard these last couple episodes were really good. I don't think it holds up against some of the other ones here.
Agreed.
Okay. So that leaves us with Neon Genesis Evangelion, Undone, Pen 15, and My Hero Academia. Is it fair to say Pen 15 and Undone? Both really good, but it's going to come down to the anime.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Mm-hmm. And I think we know, right? I think between Evangelion and My Hero.
Well, here's the thing. Evangelion, I've never experienced anything like that with a show.
No.
Where I was so intrigued by it, and then it just became something that was unlike anything I'd ever seen and was so amazing. And then it just gave us this weird ending, if we're just talking about the show and not the movie. The last two episodes, like, even though I hated them, and obviously if you listen to the podcast, you know that, for a show to inspire that much emotion in me and that kind of response is so rare. And I know at this point in my life that I should value these like moments of, like when a piece of art can inspire that kind of feeling. It's because it is so rare.
It's so unlike anything we've ever seen.
Yeah, it is unlike anything. And My Hero is obviously a fantastic show. But it is kind of formulaic. It is kind of like in the class, we're training, there's some kind of contest, we're competing with each other, or there's a villain coming and we have to defeat him. Neon Genesis Evangelion did a completely different thing. Like, that was a totally non-linear plot.
Oh, I've never seen anything even remotely like it. And even in, like, the little anime we've seen, like, you know, one of the first things we covered on the show, anime-wise, was Assassination Classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another, like, you know, I know enough about anime to know that, like, the classroom and all these, you know, ensemble cast, you know, all these different wacky characters and stuff is a thing in anime.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I don't have the scope to compare My Hero appropriately to all those.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what you mean. My Hero, for all we know, might be, like, the best one of those,
mm-hmm.
whereas Evangelion... Again, we don't have the scope of anime knowledge. Maybe there's other stuff that is in the same vein, but we sure as hell haven't seen it.
Yeah, and looking back on that show, even though I was upset when it ended, I look back on it extremely positively because it was so weird and surreal and just how dark it got, and it was so like adult in a way that I didn't expect, and just the art design was so wild. It had these like weird mechs were also organic, and there's so much fleshy stuff, and yeah, it was such a bizarre experience.
These are our awards. We can make up the rules, and I think it's fair to include End of Evangelion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we watched that as part of this podcast,
mm-hmm.
Part of the same series of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and factor that in. And that also, you know, is interesting that it gives it more of an edge, maybe, in that we saw the full story of Evangelion, not counting all the billion remakes and all
right.
that. Whereas My Hero, there's a whole four season that we haven't seen any of. The story's not done.
Yeah, if we're counting End of Eva, that Asuka fight with all those angels, like, before they come back to life and destroy her, that was so fucking badass. Actually, that whole thing was, even when they come back and destroy her, that was
all
fucking...
that's awesome. And then the end, just
oh
that
God,
unbelievably
that
surreal, like, just like, what are we looking at right now?
So bonkers.
Oh, man, I'm torn now.
Yeah, I am torn as well. My Hero is easier to watch, for sure. It's easier
yes.
to watch. It's much easier to follow.
Yes.
It's cut and dry. Like, there's really no confusion about what's going on in the characters' heads. They wear their hearts in their sleeves. All of them do.
Yeah.
It is... It's a really amazing show, and it does it so well. But nothing is like Eva.
I also think, like, in terms of, like, the action and the way they do it, like, My Hero is very kind of like comic book, you know, huge, big, you know, Street Fighter attacks and comic book attacks and stuff like that. They look awesome. Sometimes they have, like, huge impact. But, like, I love the way they do the action in Evangelion, mm-hmm. where it's, like, it feels like you're watching things get fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, like, whenever, like, an angel or something, like, does a move to a unit, and it's just like, oh, God, like, you're, like, wincing at this. Like,
yeah. And the fights are always these, like, coordinated attacks with all the units against the angel.
And all the different angel designs and everything. That show's really good.
Yeah, it's a special
show.
The music was so good.
The theme. We wake up every day to Masato's
breakfast.
That's my alarm clock. Oh, this is harder than I expected.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be My Hero with a bullet, but like, ugh.
Because now I can look back on the totality of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
And that's, you know, that's a huge mark in its, you know, a corner for this category, because
mm-hmm.
we haven't seen the whole story. So,
and obviously the fact that we're having this discussion, I mean, both shows are incredible.
I mean, I would be absolutely happy with either of these winning, but I know I have to cast a vote. And
mm-hmm.
so now that's what I'm wondering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and put my vote down for My Hero Academia. It's not one way over the other or anything. Like I said, mm-hmm. I'd be happy with either of these. But if I had to pick one, I think My Hero is really good at representing like a breadth of... Makes me laugh, makes me cheer,
mm-hmm.
makes me inspired. You know, the animation's great. Just there are so many great, memorable characters
mm-hmm.
from like, and it handles kind of like darker characters like a Todoroki or a Bakugo, and then some like straight up comic relief like Mineta,
mm-hmm.
to one that kind of toes the line between inspiring and funny like All Might. You know, I think it just is doing a lot, and it's doing it all very, very well.
Yeah.
Evangelion's more focused and it has a more consistent tone. And that's not a knock against it. Mm. But like, I think I have a lot of respect for how wide-ranging My Hero is and how good it is at all of that. Mm. So if I had to pick one, I think I'm going to pick My Hero. So that's my vote.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, Neon Genesis Evangelion made me so upset at the end. But the fact that it could even do that says something about it. But My Hero is something that even if like, because sometimes I don't really feel like watching something. I just want to, you know, play a game or just look at Reddit or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we start watching a My Hero episode, I'm always into it. You know, yeah. I always get into it. So I think I wrote for My Hero as well.
Okay. All right. But with a very close number two, mm-hmm. it seems, with Neon Genesis Evangelion. Mm-hmm. Man, we like some anime stuff. Anime has had a pretty good track record with us. I know One Punch Man didn't super land with us, maybe because we didn't know all the tropes and jokes it was doing. Mm-hmm. Assassination Classroom was what it was, and Case Closed was also what it was, you know, kind of like a kid's thing. But, like, My Hero and Evangelion are, like, two of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right. I'm curious to see the audience vote on this one here. Okay. It's the same top two. Neon Genesis Evangelion is number two mm-hmm. with 31% of the vote. And number one is My Hero Academia with 43% of the vote.
Okay.
So My Hero Academia, across the board, is our favorite show of the Panty Awards 2019.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Yes, congrats to My Hero Academia. We have not seen the last of you. All right, and that leaves one final category here. We have got... Well, I'm sorry. We've got one final category here.
Best Movie.
All right, the nominees are... The Cable Guy,
Bram Stoker's Dracula,
The Perfection,
Snowpiercer,
12 Monkeys,
Scream.
All right, I think one that sticks out here, the first one I would submit to cut, I think you might have liked this a little more than I did, The Perfection.
Yeah, we could cut that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We haven't really mentioned it at all in this, so we'll just give it a quick moment
here. It was just so bizarre. It was really, really bizarre. That whole end.
Yeah, it's dark and like came out of nowhere. And like we went in blind, which was a fun way to watch that. Yeah, I didn't really know what I was getting into. And I don't think it's necessarily a great movie, but I think it was interesting and I'm glad I watched
it. Yeah, I'm glad that was a Netflix original. That was yeah. that came out of nowhere and it was just like, this is an awesome little thing. I mean, it's a great movie. I wouldn't say it was my favorite of the year, but it was a great movie.
And that shows you how much stuff Netflix is putting out to speak to it being the best streaming service mm-hmm. is that like we were struggling to think of what things did Hulu have mm-hmm. here. Netflix had so much that we totally forgot that, you know, a nominee for best movie here was totally. On there. Okay. You know what? I'll cut one of my own here. I'll cut 12 Monkeys. Okay. I've got a real fondness for that movie. Mm-hmm.
It's a great movie. I feel like the pacing is weird and it kind of, the beginning or the middle is kind of like drags on a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But I love that concept. I thought Bruce Willis was such a great guy for that role.
The whole main three, him, Madeline Stowe, and Brad Pitt, I thought all did really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, and so. I'm a sucker for any like dystopian future kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's got enough weirdness, you know, that Terry Gilliam like weird future going on that
yeah
Terry, really good
the Terry Gilliam aesthetic is like everything's so like handcrafted mm-hmm. and kind of steampunky and it's so cool. I love his movies. We have to see Brazil.
I would love to. Brazil's I think that so might be on streaming. That could maybe we come in 2020. We'll see. So then we've got four. We've got Cable Guy, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Snowpiercer, and Scream. I think I know what you'll pick to be the next one off.
Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was really good, but I mean it wasn't amazing to me. I thought the ending was kind of like whatever. I mean it was a fine movie. I wouldn't compare it anywhere near Parasite.
Right.
The director's movie that he came out with this year, which was my favorite movie of the year outside of the Panty Awards. But it was fine. I just felt it was kind of predictable, you know?
Yeah, I think that was one of them that, you know, you and I have very similar tastes and stuff. So if it ever seems on Panning the Stream that, you know, we tend to agree a lot, it's like, well, we tend to like a lot of the same stuff. But I think I did like Snowpiercer more than you did. I came away from that just being like, yeah, that was a cool, weird movie. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. But yeah, not against these top three.
Mm-hmm.
The top three are The Cable Guy, Bram Stoker's Dracula, and Scream.
Ah,
yes.
Yeah, I think I would be okay cutting Scream.
Yeah, yeah. Against these other two, yes. It's really good. And mm-hmm. it's held up. It's aged very well, I think. It feels still very fresh, and it does not feel like this super aged horror movie. does smart things for the genre without being too distracting about it, I think. So just want to give it its due. Scream is a great movie.
Very self-referential, like a lot of movies are not, especially in that genre.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed it. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Which means the last decision we're going to have to make in our first annual Panty Awards is, what is our favorite movie between The Cable Guy and Bram Stoker's Dracula?
So, as far as I'm concerned, Bram Stoker's Dracula is carried by Gary Oldman's performance. The movie itself, it really isn't that amazing a movie. I mean, some of the set pieces and everything were really cool, and the way they shot things and the practical effects they used were really awesome. Like, they were, you know, the way they shot some of these things, like the map, there's this one scene where just really creative use of, you know, the things, the resources that they had. And obviously, Gary Oldman's amazing, and Winona Ryder is just a delight. But The Cable Guy, for me, it was kind of transcendental. I was raised being told that The Cable Guy wasn't a good movie. And I had no idea that it was the way it was. When we sat down to watch it, I thought it was just going to be like a slightly more like a black comedy that was just like kind of deviated from what people expected Drew Carey, which it totally was. But it was so dark. It was so creepy. It was a horror movie.
They don't try to make him likable.
No.
He's a menace.
He is. He's terrifying. And it's an incredible movie. I love The Cable Guy. It was so dark. It's so rare that a movie, and I think I said this when we were recording our episode about it, but it's so rare that a movie can like be so good at being genuinely funny and wacky and genuinely terrifying.
Yeah, very few movies can do that.
Yeah.
And I have a ton of respect for when the rare occasion where an actor on the, you know, just AAA, you know, top of the world actor in their prime does a really bold thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other example that I can think of is Schwarzenegger with Last Action Hero.
Mm-hmm.
He had just made like T2. I mean, he was like at prime, you know, I mean, I guess you could argue that maybe late 80s Predator type stuff was prime Schwarzenegger, but like T2 was his biggest movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming fresh off that. And then to make this really weird self-referential thing, not to go on a whole Last Action Hero thing, but it's awesome. It's aged very well. I compare that to Jim Carrey, where it's like Jim Carrey could have kept making Dumb and Dumbers and The Mask and Ace Ventura's forever and just kept doing that same thing. But at the height of that, he makes this thing and people weren't like ready for it. They didn't like it. They're like, no, this isn't. We want to like, you know, Jim Carrey. We don't want to fear him.
Yeah.
And so that was such a cool, bold thing for him to do and just knocks it out of the park.
Yeah. And even it's aged really well. Like the stuff that was like prophesizing about the future of technology.
Oh, yeah,
and it's totally accurate. And it's really cool to look back and see these actors and directors that we're very familiar with, like Judd Apatow, and, you know, Jack Black was in this, and Leslie Mann. Like
Andy Dick and Janine Garofalo.
Yeah,
and,
like all these people that we recognize now, like in kind of one of their early roles, I would say.
A lot of them, like they were kind of like underground comedy people. Like David Cross, I think, is in that. Is Odenkirk even, or is maybe just Cross?
I don't remember, but I loved The Cable Guy. It's one of my favorite movies. I think it's just, if I have a list of like my favorite movies outside of the panties, Cable Guy's definitely on there. It just shocked me, and what it tried to do, it just nailed what it was trying to do. And if you were like me and grew up being told that it's not a good movie, you should check it out because it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it really is. God, I'm just thinking of the movie now. Like even the little bits with like Ben Stiller playing the brothers in the courtroom, remember all that stuff? Like it all works so well.
Yeah, I remember that one scene where the cable guy is just scarfing down eggs, and Matthew Broderick has the realization that the girl he slept with the last night was a prostitute that the cable guy hired, and the cable guy is just like saying it totally nonchalantly, like, "Oh yeah, I tested her out the week before or something." Like,
yeah,
it's just so fucking diabolical.
And Broderick plays such a good straight man, and like, just the movie's got so many just great moments in it.
Yeah.
All right, I think we might be on the same page here.
All right, excellent.
I think the best movie in the Panty Awards 2019 goes to The Cable Guy.
I'm so happy with that.
Me too.
I love
The Cable Guy. Bram Stoker's Dracula, badass movie.
It's awesome.
Love that movie. I bet that surprised you too with how good it was.
Yeah.
And especially me coming right off reading the novel, like it was so fun for me to watch it. But yeah, I think it's got to go to The Cable Guy. That's our winner.
Congratulations, Cable Guy.
Congrats, Cable Guy. And let's go to the audience vote here. Ooh, boy, it's a pretty close one here. Oh, wow. We got a surprise winner here. Number one best movie from the audience, Snowpiercer.
Oh, okay.
With 30% of the vote. The next closest, two of them tied with 17% of the vote, so Snowpiercer with a resounding victory. The second place is tied between Scream and The Cable Guy, followed up by Dracula and 12 Monkeys, and Perfection didn't do too great. But wow, Snowpiercer wins the audience award.
Congratulations to Snowpiercer.
Yes. And so yeah, let's just, I'll do one quick rundown of all the winners here. The Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan Memorial Award, also known as Most Mediocre, goes to Living With Yourself. Favorite Reality Programming goes to Terrace House. Best Quirk goes to Shinso for Brainwashing. Worst Performance is Alan Bag, Rod from Birdemic, Shock
Alan
and
Bag.
Terror. It's Bag with an H. Best Performance goes to Gary Oldman for, as Count Dracula. Favorite Moment, All Might versus All for One in My Hero Academia. Worst Thing We Watched goes to The Snowman. Mm. Best Streaming Service is Netflix. Best Show, My Hero Academia. And Best Movie, The Cable Guy.
It's an excellent list.
I'm happy with those winners.
I'm very pleased.
I think we came to a real good list of 10 winners here.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we were finally able to get the Panty Awards together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll make this an annual thing.
Totally. It's nice to reflect on all the stuff we watched and give some things its due. Like, because my opinion on some things like Neon Genesis Evangelion kind of changed a little bit in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I was surprised by that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I can appreciate it now more now. But yeah, I'm glad we did this, and I look forward to next year's Panty Awards.
Yeah, it's a great reminder of, like, you know, one of the things we really love about this podcast is that we watch a lot of things we wouldn't normally watch. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if we would have rewatched Dracula or 12 Monkeys or started, you know, these anime shows or anything without the podcast. So we hope you all enjoy listening to it. We definitely enjoy making it each and every week
for
you.
We certainly do.
And I know we usually end each one of our episodes. Well, we tell you about the Patreon, which I will do that. We have a very simple Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/panningthestream, we've got one $5 tier that gets you an ad-free version of this here podcast each and every week. And also, we always have a bonku for one of our supporters every week here on Panning the Stream. But this being the Panty Awards, we wanted to do something special here before we get back to your weekly bonkus. We just wanted to run down and thank every one of you that's supporting us. Obviously, everyone that's just listening to the podcast, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, we have no expectations of anyone to support monetarily, but for those that do, we want to give a special shout-out here. So, Bonk, why don't we give a little shout-out to everyone that supports us, both on Anchor's listener support and also on Patreon.
I would love to. Adam, thank you so much. Alex, you're the man. Andrew, what a guy. Annabelle, we love you. Arvid, I know I misspelled your name in that bonku, and that's forever haunts me. Austin, what can I say about Austin? Bo, what a boy. Ben, Blake, Cassie, CHMR64, God, I love CHMR64. Christopher L., Daniel, Deebs, my man Deebs, the consistent
Deebs.
Consistent supporter.
Love Deebs.
We really appreciate him. Edward, Eric, Fernando, Gary. Oh, hi, Gary.
Is it two Garys, or did you just say Gary twice?
I just said Gary twice. It's just one Gary.
Okay.
Ivan, the man, the myth, the legend. Jeff L. Jeff C. Jesse. Jesse, I don't want to read your full name, but it's very cool. Jesus. Jesus, glad you figured out butter.
He wrote that.
He wrote
put
that.
Put that on his name, yes. I did.
Jesus Z. Joe W, just plain Joe. Josh E, that's initial E, not Joshy baby. Casper, you have an amazing name. I assume you're, maybe it looks kind of Finnish to me, I don't know. Kenny, Kurt, gotta love a name with a K. K is such a strong letter, highly underrated. Lance, I mean, you're named after a weapon, that's so cool. Lolo, gotta love Lolo. Malik, our man Malik. I feel like I've written you so many bonkus, Malik.
I've emailed back and forth with them. Talked to them on the Patreon, yeah.
Oh, what a person. Maria, I'm going to say that's my mom. And
okay.
Mommy, if you're listening to this, I love you. Mom of the Year 2019.
Did we turn her into an anime fan?
I don't think so. Matthew, thank you so much. Michael C., looking forward to the next time you come to the city to hang out with us. Michael M, Mitch, Neil J, Nitten, I hope I say your name right, Nolan, Raymond, Ron Ladd, Samir, Scott K, Scott S, Snack, the great Sulkin Raven,
ooh,
good old TJ, S. Thomas, Tommy, a.k.a. Grillman, a.k.a. my father, a.k.a. dad. Just the most quality guy around.
He's the best.
He's the best. Wesley M., Wyatt, Yashar, YX Casual, Zach, no C, just K, what a name.
Cool.
Zane, oh boy, you are a comic book character. Zed, I mean, you guys are just, what can I say? You're an amazing crew. We are eternally grateful for your support. Thank you so much. Knowing that you guys like this podcast enough to do that, it really means so much to us, and it's the motivation to, you know, among other things, to make sure we're giving you guys the best podcast we can give you.
Yeah. It's unreal that, you know, this little thing that we started not too long ago. I mean, it really does not seem like that long ago that we were sitting on the bed with the one microphone between us with the bad audio quality and all that. And now we've got a thing here each and every week that we do, and it's really cool. It is something very fun that Bonk, you and I just wanted to start as something creative we could do together, because, you know, obviously I've had podcast outlets for a long time, but we've never really got to do something like this together, and something that started like that, and now we've got a little community, we've got supporters, we've got, you know, more people than we would have ever expected listening to this podcast each and every week, so.
Yeah, totally, and just personally, I know when I started this podcast, you know, I'd never done podcasting before. And I'd like to think that I've gotten a little bit better as time has gone on. So I thank everyone for your patience and your support. And so just thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, everyone. You can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter. You can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. Give us the 5-star review on iTunes if you like what you're hearing. And again, thanks so much. We're coming up on 100 episodes, and we're still going strong. Thanks to all the support from everyone. We are going to keep moving each and every week. You're on Painting the Stream. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.